Good morning to you all.
Here he comes.
I tell you, it is really a cool thing that at seven, before 7 o'clock in the morning, that you got this kind of a buzz with a bunch of men that you have to almost quiet you down. That doesn't happen that often. That's a really encouraging thing. Hey, before I get started, I'm going to mention that on your table, if you haven't seen it already, got some pronounced about the men's retreat that is going to be coming up in April, the last weekend of April. And if after the hub ends, back in that back corner, Craig Van Gorp will be back there to help people if you want to register. So information's on your sheet as well. We are going to be doing something differently this morning. And what was planned, I'll tell you what was planned, then I'll tell you what we're going to do. What was planned was that I was going to be teaching this morning out of John 13. As we continue in the Upper Room Discourse, and in John's account, he begins that with the where Jesus washed the feet of the disciples. And I was going to be having time the end of last week after I was planning on being back from California to prepare that. But when my father's surgery got postponed to later in the week, I extended my time. And what ended up happening was Jeff Falkowski, who is a dear, dear brother and good friend of mine, he said, let me wash your feet. Let me serve you by saying, hey, listen, you attend and attune to your family because they need you. And he was right. They really did. And so he said, let me prepare for speaking on Tuesday. I said, fantastic. Thank you. Well, then Jeff, our brother, is sick right now. He got sick this weekend, pretty sick. And so hopefully we're going to see him back here in a day or so. So I want to tell you a little bit about what we're going to be doing instead of having a regular lesson. Because as you know, if you've been around the hub for a while, twice a semester, we try to take extended time around our table to share prayer requests and then have a chance to pray for one another. Some of you have said that's some of the most rich time for you at the hub. And so we're going to do that in a little bit. But I wanted to fill you in because so many of you have kindly asked me how my dad's doing and how I'm doing in light of how my dad is doing. And I thought, well, I can't put that into a text. So I want to share with you a little bit, in a sense, out of a way of also telling you thank you for praying for my father, for me, the rest of my family, because God is showing up. There's still a process here. A little spoiler alert. My dad, first of all, is recovering, but he still needs a heart procedure soon. My dad did not make a decision last week. When he was facing possible death, he did not make a decision to place his faith in Christ. But as I'll share with you a little bit, there's a little crack that for my family is actually huge. So I want a little background because there was prayer for my dad physically. But if you, I was really asking people because my dad's going to be 90 this summer. He's not going to live for a long time. It's amazing he's still alive. He's not, I asked my mom, I don't think my dad's exercised in 70 years, literally. But the real prayer was for his salvation, for his spiritual health. So a little bit, I'll share a little bit of background of his life in a second. But as you may know, some of you weren't here last week, and you may not know what I'm talking about. But I got a call. Gosh, I guess it was the end of 2 weeks ago. That my dad was bleeding internally in his lower GI and it wasn't stopping, and they were facing an emergency surgery. But the issue was, because he had had a heart attack this last year as well, could his heart survive this kind of surgery? Because it was going to be major surgery. And so we all recognized that if we wanted to have a chance to spend time with dad, it would have been before that surgery because we didn't know, and he didn't know if he would survive it. We were all very aware of that. And so I flew out a couple Fridays ago, and when I arrived, went right to the hospital, and my sister was there. My brother was flying in the next day. And when we got there, I came into the room. I don't know if my dad knew I was coming or if he didn't, but my sister and I walked into the room, and he just looked at me, and the first things he said to me was, "Be sure to take good care of your mom." And he looked at my sister. My dad and I have always had a good relationship. I shouldn't say that. No. We have not had a close relationship, but it hasn't been problematic, if you will. My sister, on the other hand, and my father have had a very difficult relationship since she was a teenager. So my dad then looked at my sister and basically began apologizing for things going back to those teenage years. So it was as if he was trying to say, if I don't have a chance to talk to you again. Well, as it turned out, my dad actually had that this because of his heart's condition wasn't strong enough. They waited until Tuesday late afternoon out in California to do that surgery. But during these days, his heart was being they were fueling him with epinephrine to keep that heart strong enough to prepare. But in those days, in like I don't know how many days, I think he needed 13 or 14 units of blood to keep him going during that time. So as I said, my dad and I always had a respectful relationship. We were never close. My dad doesn't know how to be close with people, including my mom. And he always kept the discussions about faith sort of at a respectful arm's length type of a thing. So, little background, we were raised irreligiously, meaning church faith wasn't a part of our family. My dad's father was Jewish. My dad's mother was Catholic. Little background in my family, it sets a little culture. When my Jewish grandfather, married my Catholic grandmother, not long after that, my great grandfather, my Jewish great grandfather, died very soon. My Jewish great grandmother told her son, my grandfather, you killed your father by marrying her. So this was sort of the culture in which my dad was raised. My mom's is a different story, but also not positive, even though her parents were believers. The only believing relatives I have were her parents, my mom's parents. So as a result, my parents came together and they chose to say, we're not going to raise our kids in any kind of faith background at all. So that was a little bit of the background. But my dad would say, he would say, I'm not an atheist. My dad was an eye surgeon. He said, because I know so much about the human eye, I know enough to know that there is a creator. He'd call himself an agnostic. He never saw his need for a savior. And a lot of my conversations with my dad and my mom over the years have been about need for Christ because they're very, in their own eyes, and really in most other people's eyes, they're very moral people. So when my dad began his practice as a doctor and he moved from Michigan out to San Jose, California, which would become the Silicon Valley. There were two sides of town he could choose to live on. The very affluent side, where later all of the Silicon Valley magnates and all would live, or the poorer side of town. He chose the poorer side of town so that he could serve the community there that might not be able to otherwise afford good care for their eyes, which was a very noble thing. He also was of probably 50-year member of this Kiwanis Club. And he was most proud of the fact that he could offer these scholarships for these students who were in at-risk schools and may not have much opportunity. So these were the things that my dad was most proud of in his life. Now, I tell you this all for a reason. Before I got there on Friday, and I got a text from my aunt as I was coming from the airport to the hospital. And she said, "Hey, listen, this is really good news. Your dad met this afternoon with a Catholic chaplain at the hospital, and Dad was really encouraged by that." And so when I came to the hospital, and as I was sitting there with my dad, he told me about that, and he said, "Yeah, that it wasn't a priest, but he was, I guess, a lay chaplain." But he said, "Well, listen, Tom, with all the good things you've done in your life, the way you've helped people, you have every reason to have confidence that if you're facing death, that you're going to be good with God." So for my dad, he took a lot of peace in that. He's never really had peace. So I'm saying, okay, wanting to talk with dad a little bit about this. And then he said, the last few days I've remembered the prayers that his mom, my grandmother, Catholic grandmother, taught him how to pray as a kid. So he said, I spend a lot of time reciting these prayers over and over, and they've helped me sleep better at night. And in that conversation, I said, "Well, Dad, let me ask you something. When you're praying, do you ever say to God, Lord, I need you?" And his response was, "No," almost as if to say, why would I do that? You can imagine how discouraged I was. When I left for the trip, I left in kind of a hurry, but I asked my friends and coworkers and all to be praying for this, praying that God would open a door. I've shared the gospel with him before. This was a key time. So you can imagine how discouraged I was when this is sort of what was happening. And also, I asked people, I said, "Listen, would you pray that God shows up, even in my dad's dreams, for him to see his need?" Now I'm going to fast forward. The surgery was Tuesday afternoon, late afternoon. Y'all were here praying exactly, 20, 1 week ago. I know that you probably listened a little bit later. I didn't listen live at 4 a.m., but I listened a little later to the message and knew that y'all prayed for my dad, which I appreciate. Well, that was 4 a.m. California time. I get into the hospital as visitor hours open. I said, "Dad, how was your night?" And he said, "I had a nightmare. Just woke up from a nightmare not long ago." I said, "Nightmare? What happened?" And this is what he told me, and I wanted y'all to know about. Again, he knew this was the day of his surgery. And he said, "In my dream, I was allowed to take the afternoon and go do something fun that I would want to do." So we drove over the hill to San Jose, my original hometown. They lived on the coast now. And I went to, my dad's a big model railroader. That's his thing. He goes, "I went to this model railroad thing, but I began realizing it's time. I got to get back over the hill and get back in time for my surgery." And so he said, "We got to go." And this was very interesting. And he said, "But as we're going, the person driving the car was your grandpa, not my dad's dad, but my mom's dad, who, again, he and my grandmother were our only believing relatives. They died when I was in my 20s. They're in Michigan, and there was a blizzard during church. And one lady, her car couldn't get out of the snow, so they said, 'Let us take you home.' They took her home, and on the way back, they hit an ice patch, and my grandmother and grandfather died together, skidding off the road into a tree. But I know that my grandmother and my grandfather prayed me into the kingdom. I spent summer there, and I would see my grandfather, very, very poor farmers. Their house didn't even have doors on their rooms. So I would walk by their bedroom. I'd see my grandfather on his knees every night. So I know that he'd prayed for me, but I knew he also, they had been praying for my father, of course, and their own daughter as well. So my dad said, it was your grandfather, Grandpa Shively, that was driving that car. And this is where for him it was a nightmare because he said he was driving backwards. He was driving away from the hospital. And he goes, so he was so frustrated with him. And when we finally got to the hospital, he goes, in the hospital we got there, didn't look a thing like the hospital I'm in. He said it was all glass. It was all clear and had doors all the way around. And when I got up to the doors, I couldn't get in. They were all locked. But inside the glass, I could see different people walking around. They were all chaplains or they were priests or something like that. And they were ignoring me. They wouldn't let me in. I was so frustrated. Why do you not care that I need to get in here? And that was what he told the story. And then he said he woke up. So not long after that, my family began arriving, right? And we began realizing that once the surgery began, once they took him away for the surgery, this was probably goodbye. So we made sure my mom had some time alone with him so my dad could thank her for the way she's loved him all these years because it hasn't been easy. But I realized, I said, if I want to get some time to talk to my dad again, because I had time to think about that dream when my family was there. So I asked the family, "Hey, would you give me 5 minutes alone with dad? Would that be okay?" Again, we're like within 20 minutes of him supposed to be wheeled out. And they said, "Sure." And so I looked at, sat down next to my dad. I got really close to him. I said, "Dad, I've been thinking about that dream." And he said, "So have I." I said, "You know, Dad, I'm wondering if what that was about wasn't, if it really wasn't a nightmare, but it really might have been a gift. Because I'm wondering if the reason it took a while for you to get to the hospital was you actually need more time here. And I wonder Dad, if that wasn't really a hospital, I wonder if that was actually heaven. And my dad said, I've been thinking the same thing. And I said, I wonder if the reason you couldn't get in wasn't that those people were too busy or didn't care. I wonder if the keys that you've always thought would unlock those doors, living a good moral life, helping other people, aren't the true keys that bring us in. And I told him, I said, Dad, you know my story. For years, I was on the pursuit of being a moral teenager, moral young man. And I was doing all the right things and avoiding all the things I shouldn't do. And I thought that was it. I said, but Dad, you know my life changed the day that I realized that the key to having a relationship with God and getting to heaven isn't living a moral life, but it's what Jesus did for us and accepting that gift of his forgiveness. That's the key. So I wonder, Dad, if this wasn't a nightmare, but this was a gift for you to consider what that key really is to having that kind of security. And normally, my dad, over the years, when we'd have conversations, it wouldn't get antagonistic, but my dad would respectfully defer or deflect the conversation, a little bit of arm length, change the subject. But instead, he looked at me and said, that's really something I really need to think about. And then the family came in, and we began, there was chatter around the room. It got delayed him coming out, but we didn't know. It could have been any minute. But at one point, when the other family were talking, he looked right at me, and he said, what you said to me was interesting, very interesting. Which, again, for my family, a little crack is huge. Normally, he would never want to come back to the conversation, but he did. And the reason I'm telling you this, and well, okay. The surgery happened that night. And he told me later, when I woke up out of it, my first thought was, what side of eternity am I on right now? Oh, I'm still here, right? And he was still in ICU until right before I left. He's still in the hospital. He's going to have a couple weeks before he gets home. He's got to strengthen his body up for this heart procedure, that he may not survive that. In other words, there's a little bit of time that God has granted to him. And of course, I want to have more conversations with Dad. And I want to go back to that dream. And my prayer is that he'll say, I've been thinking about it more and recognizing the significance. But my dad also has vascular dementia. So there is the possibility that he's going to say, I'm sorry, I don't remember that. I don't know. But you know what? I was thinking about this. God, who is powerful enough to listen to y'all's prayers last Tuesday morning at 7 a.m., 4 a.m. there when my dad was probably began that dream, God's powerful enough to help him remember in these weeks and months ahead. So I'm trusting him for that. I wanted to share this not just because so many of you have asked, but I also wanted to tell you how grateful I am. And even though my dad doesn't know it, how grateful he is that you would wash our feet, that you would serve us by praying for us, by going before the Lord on our behalf. It matters. I think I learned more about prayer in the last 10 days than I've learned in my previous, at least 40 years of life. Anyway. But thank you. I'm very grateful. And what I want in that spirit, one of the reasons that we take time around our table to share what's going on is because you know what? You may or may not be facing a life or death situation in your immediate family. But I have no doubt that every one of you has something going on that we could encourage one another, serve one another, love one another by praying for one another. So what we're going to do is for the rest of our time, is just have a chance around your table to share prayer requests. And again, one of the things, if you're new to the hub, you may not have heard me say this before. When we have time to pray, let's make it first-person prayer requests. Going back to grammar school, first-person either, about yourself or your immediate family, not praying for somebody else you know that needs prayer. There's nothing wrong with that, but there's all kinds of opportunities for people for us to have pray for other people. This is one of those unique things where let's pray for us, for each other. Okay? Does that make sense? I'm not going to come up here at the end to close out, so around your table, you can close that after you're done. Thanks, man.